It is 4:30. And welcome to another edition of Valley Voices. My guest today is Dave Taylor of Coolbrick Studios. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great, Amy. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you here. Wanted to talk to you about your recent trip to Brazil.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. You know, the photos on Facebook were so alluring. They're just wonderful. And, you know, I brought this book in. First of all, you went down there to film a documentary. Is that correct?
Exactly, yeah. We were down in the Pantanal to film a documentary in conjunction with Pantera, who's one of the largest feline species NGOs that's operating worldwide. And they have a very large presence down in that area, and they have been doing some great work. And so that's what we were doing down there.
Okay. So the Pantanal, where is that?
It's in the southwestern part of Brazil. It's in the state of Mato Grosso.
Mato Grosso, okay.
And it's very, very sparsely inhabited, but it's where a lot of the, or probably the highest concentration of the jaguars exist, and that's what our documentary was focusing on.
And you guys found them.
We did.
Yeah.
We found them every day.
Well, I brought this book in because it's one of my favorite books, and you haven't read it, but it's by Redmond O'Hanlon, who's this great writer, wrote it in 1990 about his trip between the Orinoco and the Amazon.
Okay, yeah.
And it's In Trouble Again, and it's actually kind of funny. He writes, I don't know, his writing is excellent. Anyway, the part I like about it is the getting there. You know, the writing about how he just writes about the journey into the jungle. And I was wondering if you would talk about how you got there. I mean, what did you take? A car to a plane, and a plane to a train, and a train to a canoe?
Yes. Well, I took planes to Sao Paulo.
Okay.
And then from Sao Paulo, a smaller plane to Cuiabá.
Now, where is Cuiabá?
Cuiabá is one of the bigger cities in the state of Mato Grosso.
Okay.
It's sort of in the center of the state. And then where we were going was southwest of there, down on the Cuiabá River. And that was a five-hour car journey to get where we were going. And then once we got there, we did all of our exploration in boats on the river. And that's where we searched for and found and filmed the jaguars.
So no bushwhacking.
No bushwhacking. Okay. I mean, a very little, small amount of bushwhacking because some of what they do is they set and operate camera traps out in the jungle in different areas. So they're cataloging and they're doing their research that way on foot.
Mm-hmm.
But what we were doing primarily was by boat.
Okay, wonderful.
Easier to get around by boat down there.
Yeah, I bet it is. What's it like to, I mean, how many hours were you in the boat to get where you needed to be?
Well, we were in Porto Joffre, which was a very small little area, and that's the headquarters for Pantera's operation down there. So they're right in the middle of where the action is with the jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go out early in the morning and spend either all day or part of the day, and usually within an hour, we would be sitting in front of one of the cats.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
As well as the giant river otters that are down there.
River otter.
Yes.
How giant are they?
They can get to be about 5 feet long. And they love to fish for and munch on the piranha and the catfish.
You had a video of a giant river otter eating a piranha.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very visceral to see that up close.
Mm-hmm.
But they're wonderful hunters. And so, they're doing that every day.
Mm.
There's tons of capybara.
Oh, capybara.
That are in the area.
For people who don't know what a capybara is, describe that animal, would you?
They're very large. Well, they're the largest rodent in the world.
Well, they don't look like.
But they don't
Warner
look like
Brothers
rodent.
Mouse.
They look sort of like a very large, like a marmot.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
That something that we would be more used to.
But they're like the size of a small horse.
Yeah, they're size of a miniature horse.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the size of a dog,
mm-hmm.
and they are very, very quiet and very stoic. as my co-producer said, they tend to have an attitude, and they'll just sit there and look at you, and you can get very close to them.
Really?
Yeah. And they swim, and they're on the on the banks of the river, and they're also part of the prey.
Right.
For
the
jaguar.
Right. I was going to say they're a prey animal.
Yes, they are. They are, you know, they feed on grasses and things like that. We were really fortunate to see a capybara with some really, really young babies. I mean, just several inches long.
Wow.
Nursing, as well as some older ones that had older babies
so
that
herd.
Were nursing.
You
yeah.
saw a herd.
Yeah, they tend to group up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for, you know, for protection.
Mm-hmm. Sure. It's like wild horses.
Yeah. So the river otters are not much of a prey, typically for the jaguar. They tend to stay in groups, and they will fight off a jaguar. Mm. You know, the jaguar is not going to take on something that, you know, has teeth like a dog and can do some damage.
Mm-hmm. Claws,
yeah,
claws,
exactly.
Like cat's claws.
But the capybara for sure, and the biggest prey for the jaguar are the caiman. And those are the crocodile. That's a crocodile species,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they
right.
get to be about at the most, I think, around 150 pounds.
That.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you're looking like on the cover
of the book.
Mm-hmm. So we would just, you know, basically think of them as crocodiles. They're smaller crocodiles.
Oh.
But smaller crocodiles, again, they can be 4 to 5 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And the jaguar, which are very adept swimmers.
I didn't know that.
Yes, they can go down. They can actually eat underwater as well. And their paws and they have some webbing, and they're really strong swimmers. They will stalk and hunt these caiman and pounce on them in the water.
Wow.
And fight them in the water,
wow.
drag them up onto the bank.
Did you get any video of that?
You know, we didn't see. We saw a jaguar miss. We saw one stalk a caiman and miss it when she jumped.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really funny because she gets out and she knows that she's being watched.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And she was very embarrassed that she missed. And just like every cat you would ever see, she climbs up on the bank, turns her back to everybody, sort of licks herself like that was no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You
I
know?
Meant to do that.
Yeah, exactly. and laid down and, you know, just ignored us for a little while.
So. Yeah. They knew that you were there.
Yes. Down there in that part of the Pantanal, tourism, and this is part of what we were there to document, okay. has become a big thing. And these are people that come in, they fly in with their cameras as ecotourists to take pictures of the jaguar. Mm. Since that has started happening over the past 10 years or so, the fate of the jaguars has turned around.
Meaning,
before that, the Pantanal is traditionally a ranching community.
Oh, the ranch.
So it's full of cattle ranchers, and they've been doing that for years. And these are not necessarily big operations, like big corporate operations. They're family ranchers, or, you know, they're smaller by that scale. But the jaguar also kill their cattle. And because the jaguar kill their cattle, for years and years, up until really, I think it was in the 1970s, things started turning around for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The jaguar were very heavily hunted for their pelts. There was a heavy fur trade for jaguar pelts. And then the ranchers would kill them because they were killing their cows.
Sort of like wolves here.
Yeah, exactly. Similar thing.
Coyotes, wolves.
And so once the ecotourism started up, and this was with the help of people like Pantera, They began working with the ranchers to show them how they could benefit from having the jaguars around because of the ecotourism, that not only can people come to their ranches and stay and be a part of the ranching thing, but they can, the big ranches will have their own operations to take people out, see and photograph the jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
So now today, a lot of the ranchers are making 3, 4, 5 times as much money off of the ecotourism as they were or as they are off of their cattle.
Mm, okay.
So what Pantera did, and this is what we were there to document, because as we know, Amy, it's all about money, right?
Right.
It's always about money. And we can't, as much as we would like it to be different, that is one of the realities. So how do you take a species that is threatened, like the jaguar, which is a keystone species and very important to that area, and make them more valuable alive than dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the crux of what we were there to discover. Huh. And that is a model that can be applied anywhere there's human-animal conflict. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? So how did they do that?
Well, they did it through promoting the ecotourism.
Okay.
They did it through, well, there's a couple of prongs. They educationally, they worked with the ranchers to teach them how to protect their herds. Okay. By teaching them anti-predation measures. Mm-hmm. Bring your herds in at night. Yeah, here are some a certain type of lights that you can, you know, put around your corrals to protect, you know, your herds. Mm-hmm. They also began helping the ranchers bring in a couple of species of other bull that are very aggressive and very protective of the herds, as well as water buffalo, which are also very protective of the herds and will fight off the jaguars. So on one hand, they're educating the ranching communities down there to help them minimize the predation that the jaguars, you know, are you know, the amount of cows that are being killed. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they're showing the ranchers that and the ranching community that, hey, if you choose to participate and work with us, you can have a part of this ecotourism dollar that's coming down here. Plus, they've done things like they've established schools. So your kids get to go to school now. You know, your kids get an education. Your brother-in-law gets to work because
he's an incentive program.
It's a total incentive program, and it has tentacles that go out throughout the community. So the entire community benefits to the point that even some ranchers are like, you know what? We don't mind losing a couple of cows a month. We don't, because the benefits on the other side are so much greater than they were before.
So it's working.
Yeah.
You know, when you say rancher in the Amazon, I immediately wonder how they cleared their land. Are those people burning the forest, clear-cutting the forest in order to create their ranches?
Down in where I was in the Pantanal, you know, it floods every year, mm-hmm. big time. So it's a big-time floodplain area. So there is a lot of cleared area that's there naturally already that when the floods recede, comes back with grasses. Mm-hmm. And so it's a natural area for ranching. But the reality of it is that, yes, fires are used traditionally as land clearing techniques in Brazil in the Pantanal, but not as much as they are up in the Amazon.
So you see any of the fires? You were down there this summer, right?
Yeah, in August.
Okay,
yeah.
And that's when
Everything was happening.
Yes,
I didn't see any of the fires personally. Now, a couple of days before we got there, mm-hmm. Sao Paulo was totally smoked in,
right.
And it was a night during day situation that everybody read about in the paper. Mm-hmm. I missed that by a couple of days.
I think that's what drew the attention to the fires in the Amazon.
Yes.
You know, outside of South America.
But we did talk to everybody that was down there about what was going on, mm-hmm. and here's what they told us. They said, okay, yes, people do use fires to clear their land every year. It's a natural thing. It's been going on for decades. Okay. It's just part of what, you know, what happens. This year is different because of the political environment in Brazil. You know, clearing your land by fire.
Bolsonaro.
Clearing your land by fire is illegal anyway, but it's usually done in a very small scale. And it's how people have always done it down there. But this year, because of Bolsonaro, who basically cut all the funding for all of the oversight, that was a green light for, especially up in the Amazon region, for there to be a big uptick in the amount of fires and the amount of land that was being cleared.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that was one difference. Pantera takes an interesting tact when it comes to cattle ranching and even things like the fires. Mm. And I respect this. I think this is like really good because we met the people that were down there. You know, these ranchers are not bad people. They're people trying to survive. They're people trying to make a living and they're trying to provide for their family. And most of them are smaller operations. You know, they can go from a family that only has 5 cows to an operation that may have 100 or 200 cows, but they're not the big, you know, corporate behemoths that we sometimes think about. And so Pantera And they're doing this around the world because they're in just about every country in the world where there's
Pantera
a feline species.
Okay.
Yeah, they work with tigers, they work with lions, they work with leopards. The jaguar, which I didn't know, is the third largest of the cat species.
I didn't know that either.
It's tigers, lions, and then jaguars, and then leopards. Their whole thing is that, okay, we have to have coexistence because we can't expect things to change overnight. So we're not going to come down and condemn people for what they're doing. We're going to try and educate them and work with them to do it better and do it more responsibly and to show them that there's a different way that they can operate. Yeah, you can still, Panthera itself has cattle and they do ranching themselves. Mm-hmm. And they, like I say, they work with the other ranchers down there, you know, to educate them, to help them protect their herds as well as at the same time promote the ecotourism, which makes the jaguar more valuable alive than
right.
dead. The other thing is, like, they're like, yeah, this is really a bad situation with all these fires. So something like 500 jaguars were either killed or had their habitat displaced by the fires just this summer mm-hmm. up in the Amazon region.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, okay, this has been done. This has already happened. How can we go in now and help to make the most out of the habitat that is left over? The habitat that is left and the habitat that has been burned.
Why didn't they go in before this happened?
They're an NGO. They only have so much budget. They have no control over what's going on in different parts of the country. That would be something that would be more of a government responsibility to go in because it's a legal thing, right?
Right. Would they have to get permission from Bolsonaro
yeah,
or from
absolutely.
Whoever to go in there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be going on private property, mm-hmm. you know, because this is all being done on private property.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, their concern is like, how can we try and take what has happened and turn it into some sort of a positive and work with the people so that they understand that this is not, that there are other ways that they can thrive mm-hmm. and do what they're going to do without, you know, destroying so much habitat.
I want to remind listeners that this is Valley Voices. It's 4:48, and my guest is Dave Taylor, who went to Mato Grosso in Brazil. That's in Brazil, right?
Yes.
Yeah, this
mm-hmm.
summer, working on a documentary about jaguar. And we're talking about what's happening down there. You know, this summer, after what has happened this summer and what is continuing to happen, there are a lot of people, I don't know if they're groups, environmentalists, but they say that the Amazon is pretty much gone.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's not.
What did
no.
you see? Tell
but,
us
I
what
mean,
you saw
look
there.
At, you can look at the amount of deforestation from the 1970s up till current, and it's concerning.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, it is. Because the Amazon, I mean, in my opinion and the opinion of a lot of scientists, I mean, it's the lungs of our planet.
Right. Right.
The forests and the rainforests are. So, but you can also, and I was in Brazil a few years ago, up in the Manaus area, which is in the Amazon,
yes.
and you fly for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, you know, over nothing but forests. So there's there's still a lot there. So there's still a chance to preserve what is there, and it's, you know, there's a certain percentage of it that has been deforested by both development and civilization as well as by ranching.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a tremendous amount that's there that can be saved, and the forest that has been cleared can regenerate itself very quickly.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's
but those
like
old trees, you know, all of those wonderful endangered trees, you know, mahoganies, and I don't know if ebony grows down there, but some of those incredible wood.
Beautiful wood down
will
there.
That,
absolutely.
Will they come back?
Well, I'm not a forestry person,
right,
you
right.
know, so I really shouldn't speak mm-hmm. to that. But I do know that, you know, up in the Manaus area, when you're on the Amazon itself, you can be in a boat and just go for days, never see another human being. I mean, it's hard to imagine the scope mm-hmm. of that area mm-hmm. of the world,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's definitely something that the amount of deforestation is concerning, but the Amazon is still there. It's still thriving very strongly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are these pockets of conflict between miners and the indigenous people and things like that. Mm-hmm. And those pockets are what we hear and we see about.
Right.
And that's good that we are hearing.
And it makes it sound like the whole forest
right, exactly,
is like that.
Right, but that's not the case, mm-hmm. you know. It's good that we're seeing and hearing about those conflicts because mm-hmm. those need to be addressed,
right.
you know. And unfortunately, down there right now with Bolsonaro and other, you know, because there are other countries that are part of all of this, mm-hmm. you know, again, it's money talks and there's corruption and, you know, there has to be, I mean, I'm always advocating for balance, right? There has to be some sort of a balance between what is going to help people that are there prosper and at the same time protect the sacredness and of the indigenous people that live there and the resources and all of that.
Did you come in contact with any indigenous people down there?
No, I mean, we came in contact with people who have lived in the Pantanal for generations.
Right, but I mean...
And they're a combination. And I mean, you know, they're a mixed... They're all of mixed heritage. Mm. But we didn't... No, we weren't down in any of the areas that... Mm-hmm. We didn't go far enough deep into there to see any of the indigenous peoples. And most of them you can't find anymore anyway.
Right. They don't want to be found.
They don't want to be found.
Right.
Right.
You know, what was the best part of your trip?
The people.
Yeah.
The people who live there. Mm-hmm. One morning, because we focused on a couple of the kids from the school
okay.
that were there. And we wanted to see what their life was like. And we wanted to talk to their parents to see how their lives had changed with the advent of the ecotourism and people coming in. And mm-hmm. is it too much? Is it, you know, is this... Does it feel invasive or, you know, how is all this work,
sure.
you know? And so we went to a traditional home with one of the students. She was a girl about, I think she was 15. And we met her parents and her mother, who was up early splitting wood to build a fire to cook that morning on the cooking fire, which is basically a stone oven. Looked very much like a concrete block with mm-hmm. the two holes, and mm-hmm. she was building the fire and dirt floors, but, you know, very clean. It was all just very humbling and eye-opening, mm-hmm. and they're happy, and they were happy, and they were thrilled to have us, and they were just so generous with their time and with whatever they had and showing us what all they do, and, you know, they work hard.
Yeah,
doing
sure
lots
do.
Of different things.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, that was the most... You know, mm-hmm. that was the best part of the trip. And then, of course, the animals, right?
Yeah, the
Seeing
animals.
these beautiful...
The bugs?
Yeah.
Is that the worst part of the trip, the
yeah,
bugs?
Yeah, the
We've
bugs
got about
were
three
pretty
minutes
bad.
Left.
Yeah, the bugs were pretty bad.
Did you see giant spiders? And
a few, but I wouldn't say giant, but wolf spiders that were the size of half a dollar.
Lovely.
You know, that sort of thing.
Mm. And the birds.
Birds everywhere and beautiful birds. We yeah. saw Jabiru storks that were like 3-4 feet high. We saw tons of hawks. We saw beautiful hyacinth macaws. We got to see a newborn hyacinth macaw in its nest, which we got all footage of all of that.
So
it was great.
In our... The remaining minute and a half or 2 minutes that we have here, Dave Taylor, what is this documentary? When are you're in production now?
Yes.
And what happens next? Where does it? Where
well, we hope to have it. Hopefully this will be finished early in the year mm-hmm. and next year mm-hmm. in the spring, and it'll go into the film festival circuit.
Oh, great.
Just like the you know, last documentary that we did on the Native Americans mm-hmm. and the other one that we did on the rhino. Black Rhino Conservation.
Speaking of Native American, the Shining Mountain yes. Film Festival, you wanted to mention
this
something
weekend,
about that.
Yes, mm-hmm. Sunday and Monday up at the Wheeler Opera House in Aspen. Wonderful films that celebrate Native American heritage all around Indigenous Peoples Day. We encourage people to come up, and it's a great film festival. The tickets, I think, start at $15, so
yeah.
it's very affordable.
It's very
so,
reasonable.
Yeah.
And what is your Native American, your film, Whitewashed?
Whitewashed, yes.
That's make on the
It's
film
still in the circuit.
Circuit.
It just got accepted into the Red Nation International Film Festival.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's
mm-hmm.
one of the biggest ones
yeah.
In the country, and that'll be screening in November.
That's exciting. And where is that?
That's in Beverly Hills.
Okay.
That's
Are you going to go?
I hope so. Yeah. Certainly, we're up for some awards, and if we get nominated, I'll definitely go for that.
Oh, wow.
If not, yeah, I'm hopefully going to get out there for the screening.
Congratulations, so. Dave Taylor.
Thank
That's
you.
It's so exciting.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
Yeah, I can't wait to see this documentary about the Jaguar. Really,
yes.
The pictures on Facebook were wonderful.
The footage is beautiful.
Really glad that you came in to talk to us about it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Take care. Dave Taylor. This is Valley Voices.